is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome in, everybody. It is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. It is a pleasure, an honor, to debut the one, the only, Mike Blowers on this program. He'll be with us each and every week talking Mariner baseball, and he is now with us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Mike, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Good. It's good to have you in the fold. The rumor was you weren't getting tough enough questions last year, so they said, all right, let's just shift you down to the afternoon show and let them have at you. Is that how that went?
Yeah, I'm really nervous about this today.
and Dave should know that before I was peppering Dave with questions, I used to pepper Mike Blowers with questions in the media lunchroom, and then he stopped eating lunch with
me. Yeah, he has lots of questions, Mike. Lots of questions. He's very demanding.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking forward to it, though. It'll be a lot of fun this year.
Well, Mike, you know, what's interesting, and I want to get your take because we haven't had a chance to talk, is Dave and I have spent a lot of time talking about this season and expectations and all of that for the team, and I know we're just four games into the season, but to me, and this isn't making excuses or trying to, you know, soft sell, but to me, this year is not so much about the results, about the wins and losses. Of course, I want them to win. But to me, I feel like we're getting in on the ground floor of a business, and we're seeing it grow, and we're seeing it develop. There's so much youth and so much potential in these high-level prospects that aren't even up with the team yet. I feel like everybody's going to be able to say, yeah, I remember when I saw that guy's first game, whether it's Evan White, whether it's J.P. Crawford, whether it's Kelnick. Does it feel different to you than it has in years past?
I think it does a little bit. I think that probably the biggest reason why is because that a lot of these guys had a chance to play last year. Now, it was a short season, obviously, and we'll see what happens over 162 this year when you talk about the guys with Evan and Crawford, both of them winning gold gloves last year. It'll be great to get Kyle Lewis back in the fold when he's completely healthy. And then some of the additions that you mentioned that we're going to see at some point this year. So they're still trying to put all of this together. But at the same time, last year it was really about the growth of all these young players. I think this year you're going to hear Scott Servais, once they get into the season a little bit further, maybe after the first month, he'll start talking about being competitive, winning games, when they lose games, the reasons why they lost and how they need to fix things. You're going to hear more of that than what we heard a lot of last year, which was basically just the growth of these players. Is there more growth to be done? You bet. There's a lot of it, but and I think that'll be fun to watch these guys move along, especially over a full season this year. But I think you also, at some point, you have to start thinking about wins and losses, maybe not an overall record or anything like that, but just the way you're going about your business on a daily basis.
Yeah, and kind of a broad question, Mike, but I mean, what are some of a couple of the things that you would really like to see? Because Bob and I have talked about, well, whether they're a winning team or not, you know, and like last night was a good example of maybe temper your expectations. I think also it was magnified because of the Gonzaga loss, I thought as well. But I mean, it just, you know, like I said, broad question. But a couple of the areas that you would like to see on this team really improve that would make it a successful season.
Well, I think, first of all, when you look at last night, I think when you look at the White Sox, it's probably a pretty good example of what you're hoping that this club will turn into, because it wasn't very long ago that they decided that they were going to make a bunch of changes, get a bunch of young players, and they played really well last year. They can really hit. Their pitching has certainly come around. They're going to see another good one tonight in Giolito. He's going to be a tough customer for this lineup. So for those guys, that's the progression that they have to make, right? Because all of a sudden you get a look at it. And you can go back even further with Houston if you want and what they were able to do. And there's a progression to all of it. And you just don't know when that's going to happen. And I think for most people, myself included, I hope it happens sooner than later. But it's difficult to put a timeline on that. I know I've even tried to press Jerry on that. And you just kind of have to let things play out and see where you're at. Because some of these guys are going to be really good players. And some of them just aren't going to work out. But you don't know what that is now until you start getting these guys up here and letting them play a full season and working their way through. That's the only way you're going to know what you really have. And I think for me, I'm encouraged by it because I think that they play really good defense. They're aggressive on the base path. They're athletic, which is something that's taken a while to kind of get to that point. And it's been a lot of fun to watch those two things. And now the pitching's starting to come around. We don't know what that's going to look like. Bullpens are volatile from year to year. We still don't know what this bullpen is going to be. But I like what I've seen so far from the rotation, and I'm really excited to see what Paxton is going to do tonight against a very good hitting lineup. So there's progress there, but on the other side of it, there's also going to be inconsistencies, I think, especially on the offensive side, just because these guys are going to go through the league and they're going to start seeing guys for the second, third, fourth time, and the league will make adjustments to them, and then they're going to have to make the adjustments back. So I think there'll be some inconsistency there as they try to figure out what it's like to be an everyday player at the major league level.
Mike, did you ever miss any significant time due to injury?
Yes.
You did?
In 96, I missed half the season when I was traded to the Dodgers. I made it about half the year. I feel like I made it to every National League ballpark, and then I blew my knee out.
Oh, okay. And the reason I ask is watching what Mitch Haniger had to go through, it feels like it's been an eternity since the guy played. And to see him, and you always allow, at least my expectations are, yeah, maybe it's going to take him a while to find his timing and just to find his rhythm because it's just been that long. And, again, keeping in mind it's been four games, but he looks to be as he was before all of the injuries set in. His start to me is surprising only because it had been that long. For you, did it take a while to ramp up and sort of find your rhythm at the plate and just see the ball again and have your get your timing back in order?
Yeah, I can tell you, once I went through all my rehab and you get yourself healthy again, when I showed up to spring training the following year, it just seemed like everybody was throwing 110 miles an hour. And that was just missing. That was basically being out of the game for 6-7 months and working my way back. And it took a while for the things to slow down again. And now you consider Mitch, it's been almost 2 years for him. And all the different things he's gone through. So every time he starts to make progress, he takes a step back because there's something else that had happened to him. That had to be frustrating in itself. I knew going into spring training this year that he was finally healthy. I knew he'd be in great shape, and I knew that he was going to do whatever he had to do to get back up to speed. But I made the comment in the first few games that I did actually on radio in spring training that, yeah, give it some time. It's going to take some time. It didn't take any time. So everything that he was able to do, because I also felt like because of everything that's going on with COVID that he was going to be limited on what he was going to be able to work out, but he's picked it up right away, and that started all the way back to the first week of spring training. He's been on it, which is really unusual, and I think you have to give him a lot of credit for how hard he's worked and the steps that he's made to get himself to that point.
Yeah, and Mike, I can relate. I mean, it's one thing to rehab a knee injury, but then to go out and put it on the field, I thought it was really important, that play that he made in the first game. A sliding, diving catch, because I don't know if you went through this as well. It's like, I know that my knee is back and everything, but can it withstand everything that's going to happen in a game? And kind of got an early proving point there for him early on. I was glad to see that.
Yeah, so was I. I watched him quite a bit the first few weeks down in spring training just to watch him run. It looked normal to me. It certainly did. He was running well. But you didn't see him crashing into walls, and you don't want to see him do that in spring training. So yeah. I thought that was a great play. First of all, the distance that he covered, and then to make that play and didn't really have any regard for where the wall was. He was going to make the catch. And then I thought last night he had that hustle double, which showed me a lot too, because when he hit first base and he was making his turn, he planted his foot into the ground pretty hard to get that left turn going into second base, and then he had to run, and he barely beat the play, but he's completely healthy, and what a difference he makes to this lineup. I think when you have him and France at the top of the lineup, there's some offense that's going to be there, and it's going to happen early in games, which I think will be a big plus for him, too.
Hey, when you talk about the unevenness of what the offense may look like with all this youth there and the league adjusting to him and everything, and Evan White talked about last year, just being really frustrated, really pressing and things like that. And you had a conversation on a spring training broadcast, and I cannot remember who you were in the booth with, but you both said, yeah, the one regret I have from my career is I didn't have fun enough, or I took it too seriously, something along those lines, where you didn't allow yourself to have fun. And I could see that for these young guys where they're not hitting yet, and maybe it's not fun yet. Is that something you ever talked to them about? I mean, that was such a poignant statement to me, especially with such a young team that, yeah, the fun could probably get taken out of this really quickly if things get off to a slow start.
It can, and it will for the majority of them. And, you know, for myself, just watching them, first of all, the game is different than when I was playing. I think a lot of people would have probably been upset if you're out there showing a certain amount of joy in what you're doing, whether it's the other team, the fans, whatever. That part of it isn't the case anymore. And I encourage these guys, you know, when I see Kyle Lewis making a catch and robbing somebody of a home run, and he's got that grin on his face, and he's running in, and he's excited about making a play and helping out his team, I think it's fantastic. I'm all for that. But for somebody like Evan, when he's making a jump from double A, first of all, you know you're a good player, but you don't know for sure that you belong. And that's all you're trying to figure out. And at times it can get frustrating because a game that has been easy your entire life all of a sudden is the first time where it's really difficult. And there's no hiding from it. So we'll see what happens this year. But I think that he'll make adjustments and he'll move it along. But he also had to make the jump quicker than a lot of the other guys like Kyle and those guys. They had an opportunity to kind of work their way along and then get a taste of the big leagues and go back and then come to spring training. Evan was there from the start, so it was difficult. But he's already started to make some adjustments. And, you know, even talking to Dylan Moore, he's pretty serious about what he's doing. He's intense about the way he plays. And I love that, too. I think that's a good thing. If you have a combination of that, that's a pretty good team. But talking to Dylan just about the adjustments he made and how well he played last year, and he said he's had those same conversations with Evan, just in his approach and the way that he goes about his hitting and when to be aggressive and, you know, just paying attention to certain things made a big difference to him. And for Dylan, it was just get on the fastball early. And I think that's a valuable lesson. So many times when you're unsure, you're up there and you're trying to look for the perfect pitch in the middle of the plate, and it makes you a little more tentative. And the next thing you know, you're 0-2, you're 1-2, and there aren't many guys that are going to survive in this league doing that. And you have to understand, too, that these are all major league pitchers, and it's rare for them to just throw a fastball down the middle if they know that you're going to be ready to hit. They're going to start working corners, or they're going to throw their breaking ball, and they can get their changeup over. But you have to be ready to hit at all times. And I think that's something I saw from Evan even in spring training this year. He was more aggressive on the fastball early, and that will serve him well.
Yeah, I think for me, the reason why I didn't have as much fun when I played is I was always afraid I was going to get cut or replaced. So that makes it tough. I wanted to ask you about Taylor Trammell. You guys interviewed him the other day, Mike, after the game, and at the very end, with the biggest smile on his face, he says, "Go Mariners." You know, it's just, the guy is just such a gem. And, you know, I thought his sliding catch, he threw somebody out at second in that series against the Giants, laying off pitches, getting a walk. I mean, just a really mature way to start his career. But just from talking to him, he's really a special kid, isn't he?
Yeah, he really is. And you could tell his teammates love him. I just thought they were all on the top step. And if they could have jumped over the rail, they probably would have when he picked up his first hit in game three where he drove in a run and had a double. It gives you an idea how excited they were for him because he's special. And we had a chance to talk to him in spring training. And then you mentioned the interview the other day. But he kept talking about team. And I just told him basically the same thing you did. You know, you go back to the first game, which is not easy, by the way, when one, you're excited that you just made the team. And then the next thing you know, you're going to have to start in center field on opening day in front of people this year. He was pretty nervous. I was watching him back in front of the dugout before the game, probably about 15 minutes before. And he was having a great time, smiling, laughing. And the minute that the game came and he had to run out on that field, you could see a different look on his face. So you kind of have to work your way through the nerves of it all. But he did fantastic. And it's a real plus for him. And I was really excited to see him get that hit. I was thrilled for him, too, because I know the amount of pressure you can feel. And when you're a young player and you've never done it, being 0-for in your first two games is not a big deal to a veteran guy. But to somebody like that, I bet it felt like it was a month. And he was wondering if he was ever going to get that hit. So that's a big relief to get that out of the way. And I think that, you know, we'll see him play pretty well. He's got a lot of tools. He's got a lot of talent. He's just a lot of fun to be around.
Well, Mike, for me, the more impressive moment, I mean, the double was awesome, and you can't help but love that guy. But that 8-pitch at-bat that turned into a walk and watching him lay off those sliders that were just barely missing outside, I mean, on TV, maybe it looks a lot closer than it was, but I'm like, how is he laying off that with two strikes? He's a young guy who's anxious, who really wants that first hit. And he was able to do that and drive in a run with that walk. And you look at Jake Fraley, who's got 8 walks so far on the season, and we always hear about controlling the zone. How impressive is that to see guys that young with you know, that little experience under their belt go up there and show that kind of discipline?
I think it's incredible. I know for myself, when I first was breaking in, I just didn't want to fall behind and count. So I was like just the opposite. I wanted to hit the first thing that was close, you know, and get out of there and hopefully something good happens. These guys have a totally different approach. And I think it starts with them, you know, in the minor leagues and the way that they've kind of come up, because it's something that as an organization they've been preaching for, I know, well, basically since Scott has arrived. And you start to see that happening at the major league level. Now, the biggest difference for me, the thing that's impressive to me, is you have to be able to control your emotions in those pressure situations. And if you haven't been at them at this level, I can't imagine it. And they've, to a man, they've done a really nice job of that. It's rare to see him chase outside the zone. They'll take close pitches. And I think that, you know, the biggest thing with it is they understand also that there's not much that they're going to do with that pitch if they decide to offer at it. But it's still so difficult not to, you know, because you just want to get the job done in the worst way. So I thought it was really impressive with him. In fact, both the walks in that game, I think he had one in the 8th and the 10th, were impressive to me.
Hey, Mike, I think Will Vest is a guy I think read his name. You've probably been watching him for a while, but just at the end of spring training, what's a name maybe in that bullpen that a lot of people don't know about that you think might be promising?
That they don't know about. The guy that I'm probably super excited about is Graveman, and what I saw from him the other day. You don't want to talk about intense. That guy is into it, man, and his stuff is special. So I think you'll see him at the back end making the switch from being a starter last year. And, you know, we've talked enough about the health issues and why he's had to make the change, but he is just filthy out there. So that is going to be a big help in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning for them. You know, Sadler I like because he can keep the ball on the ground. Pretty good sinker-slider combination for him. It's just a matter for these guys, again, that can control the strike zone and be able to work ahead of people. Vest was somebody watching him in spring training. I had no idea how good his breaking ball was. And we saw that last night. It was filthy what he was throwing up there. And it's an interesting fastball. And I need to look into it a little bit more because his fastball somewhere between, you know, 91 to 94 miles an hour. But there's a lot of late swings on it. I saw it in spring training. And I've seen it the two outings that he's had. And I thought last night it was a big jump for him because even though he was able to work his way out of his first outing, there was some nerves there. And he didn't command the strike zone like he was capable of. And I thought he was a lot better last night than the stuff that I saw. So I don't know where he's going to end up in this pen. But he seems to me as somebody, he's not afraid at all. He was just going right after guys. So Best is somebody that Rule 5 guy, you know, I don't know how Jerry finds him, but he's somebody I think could also help them a lot because the bullpen's going to have to pitch a lot for these guys, especially in the first month and a half.
Hey, Mike, what's your take on Yusei Kikuchi? I mean, that was such a promising start, and he's a guy, you know, to be honest, I've been very critical of because he came with a lot of expectations. They paid him a decent amount of money, and he's shown that he's got electric stuff, and then for whatever reason, the wheels fall off. And it's really hard to explain. He started in this league with that really pronounced pause at the top of his delivery, and then he got rid of it. And now he's sort of in between with a little pause, not as pronounced as it was. Does it look like he's sort of found the mechanics that work for him? I know it's just one game. So, you know, best guess, what are you seeing that's different, anything that's different?
I think more than anything, it's probably just time, Bob. It's time for him to move forward. He's in his third year. His first year, we've talked a lot about all the changes that he had to go through on and off the field and what a big adjustment that would be, and playing in the major leagues for the first time. So we kind of saw that process. And then last year, we saw the inconsistency, and that one inning would always get away from him. So once he started to lose it, he couldn't get it back on track. And that's the reason why his ERA was over 5. And there are a variety of reasons. He changed his mechanics a number of times. And I think that when he went into this past winter, we've talked a lot about the velocity, his cutter that he has. I like his breaking ball. He can do a lot of different things out there, but the main thing is with his velocity, can he get his four-seamer in the strike zone consistently, which has been the problem in the past. So he's had to go to his cutter more, which is an important pitch to him. But the velo he has is special. And when you look at left-handed starters in the American League, there aren't going to be many that are going to match him. Rodon was one that last night, and you're going to see Pax tonight. But it's a small list, a short list of guys that have that kind of talent. And I just think that it's just time for him to take that step forward. And that was an impressive outing, and it's something he certainly can build on. He's going to get 26, 27 starts this year. And I like what Scott was talking about with him, which was don't save anything. When you get into the game, I want you pumping 97 in the first inning. Give us 5. We got plenty of guys out in the pen. Whatever it's going to take to do that. And that's exactly what we saw from him. And then he started to mix in his cutter the second time through the lineup. He can land his breaking ball. It was special. And then by the time he started to get out of there, he came back with the good heater again, 95 to 97. It was a lot of fun. But the biggest thing for me, and I said this before the game, before he had his outing, is can he get 97 in the strike zone and work ahead? It was obvious that was the game plan to watch him. He was so aggressive. And I think that's the mindset that he can keep. Now, mechanically, I think that he is finally in a place where he's comfortable because he's back. He has a little bit of a pause again, that little hitch thing working. But that's something he's done probably his entire life. So he's kind of run this thing full circle to get back to where he's at. But I think more than anything, it's just time for him to move forward. And after the game, he was excited about the outing also. And he understood, okay, my stuff is good enough. I can throw this heater by guys in the zone. I don't have to worry about the corners as much, get ahead of them, and then, you know, I can wipe them out with whatever I have as far as a secondary pitch.
He is Mike Blowers. You hear him on the Mariners broadcast. He's the best color analyst in the business, and you're going to hear him here every single week with Wyman and Bob. Mike, I thought it went well. Let's do this again next week.
That sounds like a plan. Hopefully I see you guys out at the ballpark.
There you go. There's Mike Blowers again. He'll be with us every week talking Mariner baseball as they get set to take on the White Sox in Game 2 tonight. James Paxton will be on the hill. I saw a tweet from Jen Mueller saying that service said 75 to 80 pitches, and then they'll see how it goes from there. So they're going to keep an eye on things since he didn't get a ton of work in spring training.
Gotcha. Yeah, it'll be good to see the big maple out there. By the way, Ryan Roland Smith tomorrow, right? So we got lots of baseball knowledge coming on this show. I think Ryan Roland Smith's going to be every Wednesday. 3 o'clock?
3 o'clock, right? Yep. Yeah, every Wednesday at 3. So yeah, Blowers every Tuesday at 3, Wednesday at 3. We'll work Shannon Dreyer in there. We'll work Ryan Divish in there. We've got you covered, baseball fans. Don't you even worry. By the way, the Twins lost to Detroit today in 10 innings, 4-3. But Nelson Cruz hit another home run. He's got 3 so far this year. He was 3-for-5 today. He's hitting 538 so far with a 500 on base percentage and a slugging of 1.308.
That's pretty good.
He's doing well.
He is.
He's doing.
Is he playing
Nelson
in the outfield at all, or is just DH?
DH. Just DH.
Could,
doing it well.
You can't not root for him.
He's 40 years old. He'll be 41 in July.
That's amazing. Well, and he's in great shape. Like, he's the guy that you want to be, right?
Yeah.
Danny said he saw him with his family downtown in Seattle one time around Christmas time. They were, you know, Christmas shopping. He said it looked like they just stepped out of a catalog.
Yeah. It's just the perfect family. Just a good looking family. And
yes,
the sweetest guy you're going to meet. Just a good dude. So I pull for him. They lost, but man, he's off to a heck of a start in the early part of the season. All right, our thanks to Mike Blowers. Coming up, Carlos Dunlap officially re-signed. We're going to hear from him. He spoke with the media. We'll let you hear what he had to say. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Oswego Mortgage. We've got the professor, John Clayton, joining us at the top of the hour, so stay tuned for that. Also at 5 o'clock, El Hombre. Michael Bradley with us. A reminder, if you don't have the 710 Sports app, you should download that. It's free, and you can do everything from that app. You can take us with you if you're on the go, out in the sunshine, enjoying the weather. You don't miss any of the show. You've got the podcast, the text. Everything's at your fingertips with the Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. And again, it's at the right price. It's free. So check that one out. Meanwhile, Carlos Dunlap is officially re-signed by the Seahawks, and he met with the media today and had a few things today. Most important of which, I would imagine, to most Seahawk fans is that he spoke with Russ before he signed, and he said Russ told him he's here to stay.
I did ask him if obviously he was going to be with us, because if I'm coming back, I'm coming back because I see him as my quarterback. And the rest of the team, I want to pick up where we left off. And he told me that he's with us and he's here to stay. And he said, you know, let's go Hawks. And I'm not going to quote his every word, or these words are not his words verbatim, but these are my explanation of how I interpreted what he said.
I'll bet he truly did say go Hawks, though.
I'm sure he did. That's the biggest certainty of all of that.
Yeah, it would have been funny if he said, and then I said, so what was that making the stink about? What was that whole thing about? And then he said to me, well, it was my agent telling me to do that, and we're just trying to make a, no, I don't know.
He unloads the whole story.
Yeah.
He really just wanted a guard and a center. That's all it was about. Yeah. He loves Pete. Everybody's fine. And once we get a center, no offense, Ethan Posick, we're going to feel really good about this.
Right. I wanted a guard and a center, but they got me a guard and a tight end, so I was okay with it. Dunlap, very funny. I think one of the best interviews I've seen in a long time was, well, I'll tell you what, who's going to rival him is going to be Taylor Trammell. Because the other day, and we talked about this with Blowers, I have it on my phone, but it doesn't do you listeners any good out there, but where he says at the end, go Mariners, with the big smile on his face.
He knows
hilarious.
What he's doing.
Dunlap, at the end of that Arizona game, when he got the sort of game-ending sack of Kyler Murray in the Thursday night game, That was coming off of, what, two? I guess they had lost three out of the last four, you know, because they beat San Francisco. But they lost to Arizona, was their first loss. And then they go out and just caked their pants in Buffalo. It was terrible.
44-34.
Absolutely. No, you don't need to hit the dump button for that one, Lefko. And then L.A. Rams, that was a terrible game. So then they come home, and, you know, and that was the one where they had the big meeting defensively. But afterwards, Dunlap was just so joyful and just so happy to be here, you could tell. And coming from Cincinnati, I guess you can understand that. We did a story on, is it William Jackson III, who was leaving for the Washington football team, and he was happy to get out of Cincinnati. So, I don't know, some people don't like it there. And he didn't like it there, all-time sack leader there, comes here, loves it, loves everything about, you know, Pete. What did he call him? Coach P or Coach Petey or something like that. He had some nickname for Pete already. I'm like, you can tell he loves it here. So I'm happy to see him back, and he was really productive, getting six sacks in, what, eight games here?
Yeah, he was really impactful, and glad he's back. And here he is telling everybody why he came back.
Yeah, I look forward to, I came back because of the culture, the transparency with the organization, and I believe that, you know, our season was cut short, and I said cut short because I feel like we had full ability and capabilities of going much further than we did, but it was cut short because we didn't perform. I feel like, you know, I welcome the challenge of, you know, starting from day one, game one, and trying to get back to where we were and going further.
It'll be interesting to see if there's any difference at all in him now being familiar with the organization and then being there through OTAs and training camp and that whole thing, as opposed to last season when he came over. You know, I don't know what that adjustment's like. I know Dwayne Brown made that move as well, coming over midseason. You're not in camp with these guys, so you sort of have to fit in on the fly. I wonder how much a veteran like that, if we'll notice a difference in the way he played. Probably just maybe just how he feels, just much more comfortable, be much more second nature.
Yeah, well, my guess would be the latter, what you said there, just how he feels and being comfortable. It looked like they plugged him in. He did his thing. I mean, and his thing is really just rushing the edge and, you know, kind of more of like the five technique guy instead of the Leo. Mm-hmm. I know the same 206 will text in, what's the Leo? We'll just call it the weak side path rusher, okay? Person's a little bit more athletic, less likely to have to take on the run and big, you know, tackles. But
rushing on the side where there is no tight end.
Yeah, basically, unless there's two tight ends. And then you go to the weak side. But anyway, you would, yeah, there's adjustments to be made. It's not that simple, but it's just a different body type and a different skill level. And here's the thing about Dunlap is that I feel like he's not that big of a guy to get the push that he gets. He's got a really good bull rush and did it a couple of times on 320-pound guys. So he has that. He also has a nice little swim move. I mean, I don't know what his go-to move is. I asked him that question. He didn't really know either. But he's
just run forward.
Yeah, I just make tackles. I make sacks. That's what I do. He's kind of like Tyler Lockett, right? He couldn't tell you what he does on the field. But, yeah, I didn't know if he was going to be that effective. And I remember during the season, everybody was talking about him being unhappy. And I'm like, hey, people were saying, what about the Seahawks? What about this? What about that? At the time, I didn't think it was about talent. I thought it was about the way they were playing defense. They weren't playing it tight enough. They were making mistakes, things like that. And they brought him in. So, I mean, it's just another testament to the fact that, you know, like for the Seahawks, I mean, all through the season, they'll be looking at corners. You know, and they'll be looking at, you know, going into camp, going into the season, whether it's a trade or, you know, a signing or something like that. They're going to be looking for corners. Same thing, you know, with any time you can pick up a pass rusher. It's a great deal. So I'm glad it worked out for him. And, you know, the last piece really on this team that I really want to see done is KJ back here. But I'm not sure if we're going to see that. But I sure loved what we saw to Carlos Dunbar.
Dunlap. Yeah.
You know what? Once Dunbar's gone.
He's gone. He's in Detroit.
Yeah. That'll get better.
It'll get a lot easier.
I'm going to say this. That'll be the last time. Not.
Here he is talking about where he says the Seahawks were transparent with him from day one.
The Seahawks, obviously, they were very transparent, and that's something that, you know, I appreciate from day one. You know, coming in, when we were doing the signing and the trade, they let me know that this would be a potential move in the postseason. And then when it actually happened, yeah, it still hit different because, you know, I'd never been cut before, but they were still very transparent. They wanted me to know that they wanted me back. This was one of the moves they had to make because of the situation they were in cap-wise, and with the new numbers.
Yeah, and good for them. It sounds like he appreciated them being up front that, hey, man, you're due 14, whatever it was, 0.1, 0.3, whatever that number was, that's untenable. We're not going to be able to. We want you back, but we can't do it at that number. So what? And it sounds like they set him up for, we may release you, you test the market, but we want you back, and we're going to make an effort to bring you back.
Right. Well, and the good news is this is his 13th year, so it wasn't going to be like people were going to be tossing cash at him. And, you know, they feel like he still has a lot in the tank. I mean, he's not missed hardly any games in his career. I mean, for a guy that's played as long, and he had, let's see, six years in a row where he played every game. And then, you know, in his 7th and 8th, 14 and 15 games. So, yeah, and that was actually the last 8, I mean. But that's his last year, 15 games. So, I mean, he's missed very few. Good, durable player. No need to worry about his age at this point. At least they saw enough what they need to see from him. And it's good to have him back. Feel like we feel like we got a bolstered sack attack here.
Just turned 32 at the end of February. It's amazing how much more effective he was in Seattle last year. He played 7 games in Cincinnati and had 1 sack. Played 8 games in Seattle, had 5.
Yeah. Well, they were cutting his snaps down, too. And they were taking him off the field in situations. And that was the reason why he was starting to, you know, want out of there and kind of make a stink.
All right, coming up, James Paxton on the Hill tonight. We'll tell you what we should expect, what's realistic for him. That's coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Oswego Mortgage. Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor, John Clayton, will join us on the program, so stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, Mariners get back to business tonight and hoping for better luck than they had last night. James Paxton takes the hill. It was so odd to have him set up the rotation the way they did, but I guess it does favor Paxton in the sense that he got very little work, had 2 starts in spring training, although he looked great, 17 strikeouts and 8 1/3 innings total in 2 games. That's really good. Now, does that translate to tonight? We'll see what happens. But with him in the 5 spot in the rotation, it sets up. Now, again, I think I say it on the air in the break? I can't remember. But Jen Mueller sent out a tweet saying, you know, that service was calling for 75 to 80 pitches tonight, and then they would see how it goes from there. So they're being very careful with James Paxton.
Yeah. Well, and that's what they need to do with him. So, and he's also one of the guys that gives you a lot of confidence in this rotation. Question marks, like we saw Justice Sheffield last night, not making a decision based on one outing. But I'll tell you what, you know, we asked so many questions of Blowers. I wanted to ask him about everybody. And my next question was going to be something about Chris Flexen. Mm. And just what he thought about that. We'll get to that next week. And hopefully by then, Flexen will have had another outing and we'll be able to talk to Blowers about it. Or, you know, Ryan Roland-Smith, who's kind of the pitching expert.
Be with us tomorrow.
Absolutely.
He'll take that question.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll do that. But, yeah, I mean, I just, so far, your impressions? I mean, Marco was disappointing, but we don't worry about him.
No.
And then next was Kikuchi. Which
pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
10 strikeouts.
10 strikeouts.
And more importantly, like we talked about yesterday, when he did get into a little trouble, he got himself out. And Blowers even said it where he would talk about, when he would get himself in trouble, it was just kind of gone at that point. He couldn't work his way out of it. So as much as you love the 10 strikeouts, I was happier to see, okay, he gave up those home runs, and he fought back. He bounced back and didn't implode.
That's a good point. And his 10th strikeout came against Posey, who had taken him deep in the 3rd inning. So, nice to see that he can handle that. And that's the thing you want to see. But Flexen, to me, I was most blown away by. And I know we all get sort of, you know, you sort of are biased by certain experiences that you have. Every time I think of Flexen, I think of him pulling his hat off and looking at his notes and his hat, and he's sweating, and he just didn't look comfortable on the mound down in spring training. And he was a guy I thought was maybe the biggest question mark. I mean, the story, he's throwing a curveball that he just started working on, and he's from the Korean Baseball League, where they saw him on, you know, whatever it was, closed circuit TV. They were watching games at, you know, in the middle of the night, checking this guy out. That's kind of how they scouted Chris Flexen and brought him in. Now he's in the starting rotation. So, I mean, he's really shown them a lot and thought he did a really good job. So, and then you go to Justice Sheffield, which, yeah, again, I mean, there were some good, there were some bad, but, you know, tonight comes Paxton, and I guess I would put Paxton in the same category as Marco. If he has a rough outing against a team that's pretty hot and doing well and, you know, kind of in the latter stages of their rebuild where they're supposed to be, I'm not going to get too tweaked over it.
Yeah, he's one if he goes out there and they light him up or he struggles a bit, he's a proven commodity.
Right.
You know who he is. You don't – Flexen, we had no idea. I mean, he had been in Major League Baseball before. He was with the Mets, but we weren't watching Mets games. And then he was no longer in the league. He goes to the Korean Baseball League. So he was known on some level. I'm sure Jerry and the scouts were more aware of him than just Korean Baseball League. But, you know, he was more of a question mark to you, to me, to everybody else, because we hadn't watched him pitch. We're just like, all right, all we saw was spring training, and you're right. It didn't look great, you know. So there were legitimate reasons to have questions about him. With Paxton, you look at it and go, okay, if he goes out there and doesn't have a great night, yeah, you're not happy, but you're not going, man, I wonder if this guy can do it. You know he can do it. He was throwing 97 in spring. He was dominating in those two games. He's shown that he still has the capability. He says physically he's fantastic after the back surgery. They're going to handle him with kid gloves. They've made that very clear. You don't wonder what he's like when he's healthy.
Right.
You wonder about Flexen. You wonder about Dunn. We haven't seen him with Dunn. Sheffield, you wonder about the whole season. So the two guys you don't worry about, you just brought up Marco. Yeah, it was not a good outing. But you're not like, oh, geez, we got a problem. What's going to happen with Marco? Nobody's feeling that way. And I think you'd have the same reaction to a proven entity in James Paxton. Not that I think he's going to struggle, but if he does, we're not going to come in here tomorrow and go, oh, boy. Now what are they going
to
do?
Let's go back to the five-man rotation.
Yeah.
Move up Dunn. Yeah, and Dunn will be a big one, too. I wonder if that's frustrating for, like, you know, you mentioned, like, Flexen for us. He came from the Korean Baseball League. But,
yeah.
You know, you look at Service and DePoto. I mean, these guys know these guys from long before. Because I was just thinking about the same thing with Quentin Dunbar. It's like, well, you know, we haven't seen it. You haven't done it. Well, they have.
Yeah.
They've seen it. They've watched practice. They've watched game film. They've been, I mean, all the scouts, that's all they do is watch these guys. So just because, you know, we haven't seen it, it doesn't mean it hasn't been seen. And by, you know, the guys that you're relying on to be the experts and to build this team and complete this rebuild. So maybe it's not as big of a surprise to them. But, yeah, Flexen was a big one for me. I just whatever, that vision really stuck in my mind. And then, you know, Justin Dunn is going to be probably the second one. I mean, I've had pretty good confidence with Sheffield. Kikuchi, I thought, hey, look, he has the ability, just as I think it was Blowers that said, hey, just had to go out and do it. Mm-hmm. And he did. Well, enough anyway, 10 strikeouts. But, yeah, Dunn is going to be another one that we'll see here soon, that is whether or not he's going to answer that question.
Yeah, and you like that his velocity's up. You like that he lost weight. He's certainly got promise. He's a young guy. He's 25. He'll be 26 in September. But he's got the raw material to work with. Talking about Dunn.
Yeah.
He just, his control was problematic. He walked a lot of guys. You look at last year, in 10 games, he had 38 strikeouts. He had 31 walks. Hmm. 31 walks. So it wasn't, hey, can this guy rush it up there? Does he have good stuff? He's got good stuff. His command is the problem. Yeah. And that's what we want to see. I mean, I think it's great if losing weight helps. I never looked at him and thought, he could be in better shape. I never really felt that. But if he felt it, awesome. He's not eating cheese now. Okay. Hopefully that helps. And the velocity's up. I love that. But none of that's going to matter if you don't have command. And hopefully he does. What are you laughing at?
What do we have to say about Justin Dunn? He's not eating cheese now.
that was his diet, right? No more pizza.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it's, you saw the same thing with Flexen, who dropped, what, 40, 50 pounds?
Yeah, 50
pounds. I have to say, next time we have Blowers on, because he's about around the same era as me, he played when I was playing, there just wasn't that focus on diet. It just wasn't. I mean, not for me anyway. I'll tell you what, I played with Shannon Sharp. Shannon Sharp had told me the only thing he had eaten was a chicken breast, baked, no nothing on it.
No skin.
In like 5 years. Yeah. And, you know, no hamburgers, no steak, no.
His body looks like it.
Yeah.
He's got that cellophane skin where you see every fiber of every muscle. Wasn't he one of the first guys that was using creatine?
I don't know.
For some reason, I remember a story attached to him, like, because creatine can make you cramp up. It can.
Was creatine illegal?
No.
Yeah, it was.
It was legal.
Yeah, I think that was in something called MetRex.
Probably, yeah. MetRx.
MetRx. Yeah. I used to take that stuff all the time. But, I mean, whatever he was doing. But point being that, yeah, that I just never thought that food would have – it never occurred to me to not have a box of macaroni and cheese on a Tuesday night before practice. Why not?
Never occurred to me that this could be counterproductive.
Maybe a couple of beers.
Body's a temple, Dave.
Some milk.
Your body's a temple.
Yeah, not mine.
It's not a playground, Dave.
Mine was more of a garbage disposal.
All right. Coming up, get your NFL questions ready. We got the professor coming up. Any questions you've got, text them in right now. 710-710 is the text line. John Clayton coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.